M1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre Lafon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. So we're here today with Christina Pizarro, who is the president of the Democratic Women of Santa Barbara County. Welcome.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having me here today.
And thanks for coming back. The last time you made an appearance here, we were talking about gun safety.
That's right. Still a big issue here. But I'm glad to be supportive of common sense gun laws.
Well, we've gone from worrying about common sense gun laws to insane gun laws. With, you know, if you have a copying machine, you're going to have yourself an arsenal.
That's right. And that's a dangerous thing. But we need to have creative ways to continue to have common sense gun laws.
I know it's very scary. Now, before the show, you mentioned to me, where did you go to college?
I went to UC Berkeley. Undergrad, and then I received a graduate degree at the Seoul Public School of Public Policy at USC.
Oh, okay, because I thought you mentioned one of
the public administration.
I thought you went to one of the CS schools, Cal State,
and I was going to great schools, but no, I'm a product of the UC system.
Okay, first of all, tell us what the Democratic Women of Santa Barbara County is. What is that group?
So we are a political pact. We've been in existence for over 47 years.
You look great for someone that started it 47 years ago.
Well, actually not. That was started by actually one of our founding mothers, Betty Stevens, and locally here. And so we've been in operation for over 47 years. And we are part of the California Central Committee and one of the chapter organizations there.
Given the fact that there's such a bridge or gulf between the right and the left, you may not want to call it the Central Committee. It gives ammunition to the right.
Right. That is true. I mean, we are a very progressive committee. We're clearly left and very liberal. And we embrace very democratic values, especially with regarding reproductive rights, female equity, equity in the workplace, things of that nature.
So what is the mission of the PAC? Is it to elect women who are Democrats, or is it to elect women that have a certain point of view? What is the overriding theme behind what you do?
It's not necessary. Well, our organization doesn't necessarily contain the mission of electing only women, but we actually embrace electing candidates that embrace our values of reproductive rights, environmental rights, a healthy economy, a good educational system, public educational system, and just to make sure that we have voting integrity and things of that nature. So any candidate that embraces our values and our mission and vision gets high consideration to getting an endorsement from our organization.
And the endorsement is different from the Democratic Party endorsement?
Yes, it can be. As our own independent chapter, we have the right to endorse our own candidates. Now, the Democratic Central Committee of Santa Barbara County can endorse their own candidates. Usually, we endorse in a congruent fashion, but we have the right and the permission of the party to endorse the candidates that we see fit our mission.
So do you put out a piece of paper right before the election separate from the Democratic Party to recommend people, or is it the same?
Usually it is the same, but when we don't endorse the same candidates, we do promote and we have communication pieces that endorse our candidates of the Democratic Women of Santa Barbara County.
Because in this community, the Democrats are so powerful in terms of percentages that sometimes people think the election is over as soon as the Democratic Party makes a recommendation, particularly for the lower end of the ballot. You know, people will make judgments at the higher end, you know, for congressman or for assembly person, but right. then the telephone calls start. You know, who do you like for the second judge, or who do you like for tax collector? And right. they say, well, look at the Democratic Party handout and just bring that into the voting machine.
That's true. And the Democratic Central Committee has a nice and thorough endorsement process. We are very respected. Our organization is very respected for our process. But sometimes we don't have the same endorsement recommendations. And then when that happens, then we have a huge listserv, and we do create our own communication pieces. A lot of people respect. We have a great elections and endorsement committee, and they have such a great respected process for over 47 years. And so the community really does depend on our communication pieces and our recommendations for candidates.
Are you afraid of what some pundits say, that as the Democratic Party moves left or becomes more progressive, you know, whether it's Bernie Sanders or whether it's the woman from New York who's 18 years old and has won and threw out the second in command in the Congress, that you're going to be too extreme for the middle, and the elections, at least in the national election, will probably be won in the middle.
Right. No, I mean, we're not really afraid. I mean, why would we be afraid as an organization to embrace values that enhance a better life for women and families, and endorse and embrace a reproductive rights and common sense gun laws? So I think that we can have a conversation. As long as we have healthy conversations, I think that we can all come to the table and really come to a middle. These are not really Republican and Democratic values. I think we have values as Americans to keep us safe, to keep us thriving, to keep a strong economy, you know, a sense of community. And I think that the Founding Fathers never meant for this such dichotomy of perspectives in Republicans versus Democrats. I think that the administration that we have now has created this type of polarity. Which is a sad thing.
Well, you know, what's really frustrating is that the majority of people in this country have voted for or approve of some sort of responsible gun control. I think it's 80% want some type of regulation. The majority likes Planned Parenthood. And yet, if you listen to the Republicans, they're the evil twins of the world. So there's a, you know, the way we're set up as a republic as opposed to a straight democracy. We have millions and millions of more people. There was a thing today in the newspaper, 23 million more Democrats won votes in the last senatorial election than Republicans, and the Republicans control the Senate. So there's a sort of reality of the way the structure is of our government, of a republic government, is that just numbers don't necessarily help. We have to find a way to get into the mindset of those people that are in districts that make a difference.
Absolutely. I think that you bring up you know, a good point, Neil, that we do. And part of the work that we are trying, our goals are to reach out to those districts that need that help, that need those votes, that need that that support to get more people to vote. Now, one of the most important things is to get the youth to vote. And it's so critical. The youth is the biggest voting bloc from 18 to 33. And unfortunately, we do not have them to come to the table. They don't feel included. They can't. And they feel that their vote does not matter. Now, here in California, we've done great things to include the youth in our voting realm. And actually, our very own Senator Hannah Beth Jackson passed a bill, Senate Bill 113, that allows youth to pre-register to vote and automatically are registered to vote at 18. So we're doing great things to have the youth to feel more included in the voting process in our community. But more work needs to be done, because we really need to engage the youth. The youth is the key.
And we need to not only get them registered, we need people to actually wake them up to go vote. I used to teach at Santa Barbara City College, and I remember the 2004 election, and everyone was really excited about voting, and I had a class of about 30 people, and I said, at the next week after election, how many voted? And three people raised their hand. And I said, why? And, you know, everyone had an excuse. Everyone had a story. And this is their lives more than anyone else's. So, you know, we need to get them motivated, not just to register, but to actually spend the 10 seconds to vote.
Right, right. And if we want to see this country change, we need your voice. It's that critical. It's your voice for education, for the types of jobs that you'll be receiving, for your retirement, for all these opportunities. If we don't vote, our voice will not be heard. It's our voice, our vote.
You're listening to AHAR Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build three new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christina Pizarro, president of the Democratic Women of Santa Barbara County. We're talking about motivating people to vote. And let's just step back a minute. And the first stage, I would imagine, is educating people about not just voting, but about the issues. Because, you know, when de Tocqueville, back in 1860, went and looked at America. He said the problem with American democracy is how well will they educate their populace, and he basically predicted what's happening now. Where in order to have a functioning republic, you need people who actually understand what the issues are. So how do we not only engage young people? How do we get them to actually look at the issues?
That's a really good question, and I think that we need to just engage children and the youth early on. I think that a lot of people, we don't have those conversations, political conversations at the dinner table. A lot of parents don't want to speak politics. When you go to your Thanksgiving dinner, the first thing is that people say is, like, let's not talk politics, but the personal is political. Everything that we do is basically political. And so it's very important to teach the youth and other people that the issues do affect them. Any type of issue, whether it's a water issue. Water issues will affect your health. It will affect your rates. It affect your ability to even move around. And so every issue is basically a political issue. And so we have to think about those things in the way that they affect us. And it's so important to have a vocalization of these issues and have a communication about it, not be afraid. I think that a lot of the time we avoid things to be politically correct. And that's an unfortunate thing. I think healthy discussion is important. And even if you don't have the meeting of the minds, but at least you can discuss the issues and at least you can know about certain issues.
So how did you get so revved up about politics? What got you into the fray?
Oh, what got me into the fray? Let's see. Well, I remember my first U.S. government class. And actually, even before that, my mom was so politically active. And so I remember her always, she never missed an election. My mom was very active. And I would always watch the political presidential debates with her. And I would just be fascinated by the energy. And then came my first U.S. government class when I was a teenager. And I learned about the importance of the three branches of government. And so that just got me thinking as to how critical it is to elect a president that understands that and respects that. And he or she has the power. It's been he ever since. But he or she has the power to appoint a judicial justice on the bench that stays for life. So those are, you know, all those critical issues about immigration reform, equal pay, got me started. Especially, I think that the critical issue that got me really, really fired up was wars. Wars, our foreign policy, and our inability to kind of meet each other at the table and to go into wars that we really have no business going into, and spending money that should be funding our educational system to create better jobs, to be more creative, and having our youth actually have something to come home to after they spend their time and energy trying to get a good job and you know, studying.
I'm glad you brought war up, because I was a product of the Vietnam War, and everyone was protesting. And then we went through the 70s and 80s, and the college kids, you know, if they were protesting anything, they were protesting the quality of their food plan. And I said to everyone I could speak to that, you know, without someone being affected by the government themselves, without having it to be an issue that affects their own future, the kids aren't going to be involved, and it can't be just war. It has to be, they have to be motivated beyond their own self-interest. So it was easy to protest back in the late 60s because you were going to die. And
right,
you didn't want
right.
to get drafted. But it's more difficult, as you're doing, to stand up and fight about a right to choose for and when you fight for a right to choose, you're not going to have to worry about that if you live in California. You're really fighting it for a poor woman in Alabama
right,
who's not going
right.
to be able to find the resources or the place to get it in a timely fashion. So what we've got here is we need to, and I think what Trump has done, which I think is good, is he's woken up the beast, the
That's
college
true.
Kids. And so hopefully we'll see some more interest in the college campuses rather than simply talking about, you know, things that are really not particularly important.
That's absolutely true. And yes, you mentioned war, and that's a very impactful situation that we have in that many governments entertain and are engaged in. However, I think it's important to also make sure that we have to think about this in many different ways.
We have a caller.
Okay.
So put your earphones on and hi, caller.
Hi there.
Hi.
I agree with everything that you've said about encouraging youth to participate in our system. However, I do have concerns about the comment related to Hannah Beth Jackson's bill registering students to vote in the classroom. I think if you research that, you would agree with me that it needs to be opposed and it needs to be rescinded. The reason why is in California schools, you cannot ask students about whether or not they're authorized to vote or not. And we already know in Santa Barbara, in the Santa Barbara Unified District, the bill has been abused. It has specific parameters of how it's to be implemented, and they've already been violated when Mr. Gore's daughter was in the school. You cannot ask students whether they're legally allowed to vote. There's peer pressure in the classroom. So I think we need to come up with a better way, but I do agree with your guest that we want students to participate in the process, but how we go about that needs to ensure that they are citizens of the United States and authorized to vote. So that's my comment, and I hope that will be considered.
Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. And I think that you bring up very good points, and I'm sure that this input is very important and critical. And we can communicate that to our very own senator. I think there's theory and practice, but the real intent here is to make sure that the youth are able, when they're 16 or 17, to be able to have a system in place that allows them to pre-register. Now, if there are concerns, and I'm sure the senator would like to hear that so that we can fine-tune this intent, which is actually a positive intent. I actually participated, along with the senator, in a registering of about 1,000 students in Santa Maria. And this is actually done through the office of the Alex Padilla, Secretary of State. And so they have a very, very critical and studied system that makes sure that we have all the laws that are respected.
Thanks for a good question. And you're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christina Pizarro, president of Democratic Woman of Santa Barbara and the future governor of California. Could I, when you become governor, can I still call you by your first name?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I appreciate that. when we talk to kids, and I mean kids, I can say kids are in their 20s. How do we get through to those that aren't on the same page as we are? Now, there's a really, really awful article in today's New York Times about what's been going on. Yes, what went on yesterday at the Florida rally, and how
there's this conspiracy theory that now has taken hold, and people had signs, and people believe that there's a sub-government in taking over the country, and you know the military supports Trump, and we have to all this. How do we engage with those people? I mean, it's one thing, which I do at home or at a dinner party, I'll say, you know, we don't care, we're right and they're wrong, but that's not going to work. How do you have a conversation with the other side, or can you?
You definitely can. I think that I'm a big believer in really listening to the issues and listening to what people's point of views are. You really learn a lot about the context that promotes their points of views. And being a good listener is important. And then you could start to extract why they feel that way. And I think having that conversation with everybody at the table, I could tell you I am a true Democrat, but I have fabulous conversations with people on the other side. And if you encourage them to come to the middle ground and even understand your perspective, it's really about political perspectives. We all have our different values, but if you can really try to let them know that they have a voice and a seat at your table, we can really start to hack out issues. A lot of the time we come in to conversations feeling polarized. We're ready, you know, we're up in arms, and that never works. You need diplomacy. You need to listen. And I feel that the more that we do that, the more that we really can get things done. We cannot get done everything on our own as Democrats. We need the other side. We need other votes, because you're not just a political leftist, let's say, if you're a Democrat. There are a lot of moderate Democrats. There are a lot of moderate Democrats that believe and are in alignment with a lot of moderate Republicans. And so we need to kind of merge those thoughts together and bring forth some type of real conversation.
Sarah Silverman, I don't know if you're familiar with her work. She's very, very funny. She's very left. She's farther left than you and I. And she had a TV show last year, which I think was just renewed, where she every week she would go to some right-wing family and get herself inserted. And they knew who she was. They told, you know, who she was. And she would have dinner with them or play with them. And they had, the first week she went to Texas, and she went to people that are as far right as she is left. And by the end of the show, they were hugging and kissing each other. And she wasn't holding back, but they just got a respect for each other. And that's sort of, you know, it's a comedy show, but it gave me a little bit of hope, because I was on the view that, you know, we're not going to be able to agree. There's a profound difference in how everyone's brain works between the right and the left. But, you know, that kind of experience sort of gives hope that maybe there is a way.
Absolutely, Neil. I feel like there are ideologies, but we all still have that human fabric. We can all get along. I have to tell you, when I used to be a human services commissioner for the county, I used to ride up with one of my most conservative colleagues. And by the end of our ride up to Lompoc, we would be agreeing on things. And it's so important, again, is to, like Silverman would insert herself into families that are completely the opposite of her with a dichotomy of thought. However, I think that once we... It's, you know, it's really about having a clear conversation, and you really start to understand perspectives. And we all want to do what's best for our families, and that's really what it is. And so when we have that conversation, we can start extracting and seeing what the best output of that conversation can be.
You said before you were motivated, firstly, by your, besides your mother, by your first government civics history class.
Correct.
Should civics be taught earlier than high school?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. I think that it should be, I mean, part of your first grade, at least in the first grade. I think we should start integrating, you know, who the players are, the people that make decisions for you, who our governor is, who our representatives are. I think that's important, obviously, on a level that children of that age, 6 and 7 year olds, can understand. But I think that's critical. I think it's part of our fabric. I think that, you know, people in other countries do it. Why shouldn't we have that strengthened educational system with good civics education?
Today, again, in the New York Times, I keep signing it because it's the only paper I read, besides the Santa Barbara News Press, excuse me. the article was about the healthcare offerings from the Trump administration called short-term health insurance. And it's 50% cheaper than the Affordable Care Act's insurance. But it is underwritten by health, so there's no pre-existing condition exemption. So if you have a disease, you're not going to get insured. It's only for a few months. It's got a $10,000 deductible. So I look at it and say, this is really worthless. And the other side says, no, we want to do this because some people just can't afford Obamacare. You know, it's like, is it like the 1860s? You can't afford a good doctor, so we'll do bloodletting, right? You know, because that's the only economically. So we're talking here about, you know, civics. We're talking about how to make it a better conversation. But people are actually dying because of policies that are in play right now. Healthcare being the number one.
And it's a disgrace, I have to say. You know, we are the number one industrialized country in the world, and we fall behind in having a healthcare system that works, whether it's single payer, whether it's modeled after other programs. But we have a healthcare system that is just a tragedy, and people are dying, and it's such an unfortunate failed policy. And I think the Obama administration tried to do the best that they could. Of course, that there are flaws within that, you know, policy. But however, the intent and the action thereof is to make sure that we offer health care to people who have pre-existing health conditions and to students that are under the age of 26 and things like that. So I think that there's more to do. But again, having this polarized conversation about health care and this quick fix that the Trump organization is trying to promote, it's not fixing it. It's just putting a Band-Aid on that. And we can't have that.
So what about the idea that if you take a Bernie Sanders approach, and some of the people in the California legislature have this approach, we want Medicare for all. Could that be a politically losing, even though it makes a great deal of sense emotionally and intellectually and in terms of fairness, we're the only country, industrialized country, that doesn't have some form of Medicare on a universal basis. It's so important now for progressives and Democrats to be able to assert themselves in the next election. Could that be a loser, the argument of let's have single-payer health insurance?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think that if we look back to the 1940s with the New Deal and we start to extract and understand, I mean, that was a big undertaking. And we had, we were able to pass Social Security and Medicare and a lot of federal good working federal programs that are actually intact and working now for our working families. So I think that we need to start thinking about reintroducing a system that works. Now, Medicare for All could be controversial right now in the California Senate and our Assembly as well. We tried to pass the healthcare bill, you know, Healthcare for All, which is Senate Bill, I think, 658. Don't quote me there, but I think it was 658. And anyway, so that would offer healthcare to all of Californians. Unfortunately, there was no real way to pay for it, but in theory, it's something that the California State Legislature is looking into because it should be a right. I think that every American, every Californian, every American should have access to good health care.
Do you take this as a litmus test? If somebody was making a presentation at the Democratic Women of Santa Barbara at trying to get an endorsement, and they said, I don't support single-payer, and they have a good reason. They say, I just don't think it can be passed. Does that eliminate them?
Not necessarily. What does eliminate them is that if they don't believe in pro-choice. So, but I think that we carefully consider each candidate, but those are our core values. I mean, it does not completely and totally eliminate you right away. We try to educate them, but most of our candidates understand what our core values are. And so if there's a lot of congruency there, then we go forward to the next step.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here today with Christina Pizarro, President of Democratic Women of Santa Barbara County. So I gave you a tough one. We were talking about choice. Let me give you a real easy one. What do you think of the Me Too movement?
Oh, goodness. Woo! Yes. Well, I am... You know, it's we don't have enough time to really promote my points of views on it, but it's a crazy thing, and I think that it's arrived at a time that we needed to have voice and power behind it in advocating for real safety in the workplace. It's time, and it's been time, and unfortunately, you have no idea how many times, Neil, people have come up to me and told me, "Oh, you have no idea what it was like." In the 60s, when women used to be called chicks and girls, and used to be, they used to be smacked on the rear, or just made to feel less, and all women wanted to do was to have a job and to have a secure paycheck so that they can come home and raise their families, and it's been such an unfortunate thing. Now, you know, getting into the whole, Harvey Weinstein thing, it's, I'm not even going to go there, but I think that we need to hold people accountable. I think that people who think that they can act like that need to, you know, get their feet held to the fire. They need to be held accountable. A lot of CEOs on top of their, you know, on top of their game think that they can, you know, get away with a lot of things, and that needs to stop.
But what do you think, and I'm not suggesting this is my point of view, but playing devil's advocate, what do you think about somebody defending themselves for something they did 30 years ago? I mean, how is that fair to both sides? I understand why people didn't complain 30 years ago, but when they complain now, it's tough, isn't it, to you know, put up much of a defense, because the atmosphere today is that it went completely 180. Now, if you say it, it's true. Before, you used to say it wasn't true. Now, if you say it, it's true.
Well, I think that that can be thought about, but I think that what you did 30 years ago still needs to be held to account. I think that, you know, you could have you may have thought that you weren't violating any rights, but you did. You made somebody feel a certain way, and now it's 30 years in the future. But what you did, the act still violated somebody's right to feel comfortable in the workplace. And I think that they need to be held to account. Now, that you could either react to it like you did nothing wrong, or you could apologize, and you know, those who hold you accountable can, you know, deal with it the way that they need to deal with it. But I think that there are many actions that were done many years ago, and it doesn't still erase that it was wrong.
We're having a conversation that hopefully is somewhat intellectual, but yet there are kids in this community that go home every night and wonder whether their parents were taken away by immigration. You've got a situation today where it's difficult to imagine trying to teach kids civics when they're afraid that their whole life is going to change in an instant. How much of a disruption of society's norms are taking place today with not only with roundups of people, but also with the border no exception policy and separating the kids from their parents?
This is an absolutely, it's just an absolutely disgusting tragedy that's happening in our country today. I think that it's a disgrace, and to cage children, and because that's what's really been happening, to have caged children and separating and have separated them from their families is a true tragedy. Children are experiencing trauma, lifelong trauma that will affect them for the rest of their lives, and that's an unfortunate thing. I think that we could have different policies. We understand. I think that we all understand that we do need to defend our borders against really, quote-unquote, bad hombres, like Trump says. But these are people, and these are children, and these are mothers and parents that are trying to escape their country of origin and trying to find a better place in this country. And to separate them like that and to put them in cages and pretend that they're summer camps is just a travesty. These policies and these actions are not congruent with what we hold to be American values.
Do you know, right before the election, when Trump was talking about groping women and it's okay, or whatever his story was, I was saying, well, I can't imagine a woman who has a daughter, or even a father who has a daughter, could vote for someone like that. And when after the election, they polled these people and they said, well, you know, there are more important things. You know, sometimes the devil does good things, and whatever that means. And I wonder how much this, the view of these kids being ripped away from their parents, is going to affect particularly women voters this time around. I wonder if they can still be immune to behavior, whether the behavior involves children.
One thing that we could always say is, like, let's hope. And I think that we need to continue to educate our entire voting constituency. I think that it's unfortunate, even going back with candidate Trump, when what he did with women and groping them and just excusing it as, you know, locker room talk. I think that people still voted for them. And the majority, a lot of support was white, educated, college-educated women. And so I was flabbergasted by that, because you don't grab people by their private parts and be proud of it. But unfortunately, people do have the right to vote for whom they are, you know, from whoever they want. But I think that we need to really think hard. You know, we have about, you know, just a few months to the election, and I think that we really need to think hard about who we really are voting for, and really take things into account and really start to think how that would affect your family. These are people too. Anyone who crosses our borders and are living in our country, whether illegally or legally, they have constitutional rights. And we cannot do this to anybody, any human being. We need to have American values and human values. And once we start losing sight of that, I think that we're losing sight of who we really are as a country.
And what I find to be most depressing is that I don't know anyone that didn't come here from someplace else. So when someone gets up and says, we don't want any more newcomers, I'm thinking, hey, we're all newcomers, unless you're an Indian.
That's right.
There is this sort of, let's close the borders. And again, not to cite the newspaper again, but today the Trump administration announced that they're considering limiting immigration to 25,000 people a year. But then forget about illegal immigration. They want to stop immigration. And if you look at Japan and look at other countries whose population growth is declining, one of the real, and in Europe too, the reason why their GDP growth is slowing is because you need to have population growth in order to have vibrant GDP. And not only intellectual growth by having smart people come to this country, just bodies make a difference in growth. So you know, talk about self-destructive policy. The idea of limiting immigration on a broad stroke is really counter to this country's history and to good economic planning.
Right. But when you're using xenophobia and fear-mongering and to scapegoat immigrants as being the wrongdoers, then you start to create a policy and you start to have people that support policies like Trump's policies. And so we really need to start to educate people. And I agree with you. I think that we have to have a good, healthy immigration process. I think immigration is good. And we, as a human race, we are moving people. Borders should not stop us. We are moving people where we have ideas, we have growth, and we have, and that's who we are as a human population in general. And I don't think any Trump wall will stop that.
Well, my wife and I last month for the first time went to Ellis Island. And when you walk into Ellis Island's museum, there's this huge staircase. And there's a plaque explaining what the staircase was for. It was built in the turn of the last century so that when people got out of third class after a three-month horrible ordeal, they made them walk up the steps because if they couldn't make it up, they would push it, they would tell them no. So our immigration policy has been pretty harsh, not just the last year or two. It's been pretty harsh from the very, very beginning. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafon founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafon Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christina Pizarro, president of Democratic Women of Santa Barbara County. And this is my favorite kind of interview because I love talking to someone who agrees with me. It's really fun, you know. We should just keep talking to ourselves.
Oh, goodness,
we're
yeah.
not going to convince anybody of anything. But so one of the good things is that the gender gap, right, is now gone. Women make as much money as men.
Well, apparently, I mean that's the law now. Especially in California, we have the strongest equal pay law, and that was authored by our very own local senator Hannah Beth Jackson. You know, I give her a lot of props. And it was, so it's not the strongest equal pay law, but we do have work to do. It came into effect just a couple of years ago, but we still have to teach a lot of employers how to implement the law. And so there's a lot of work to be done.
But how does it work cross company. So you have a CEO of a company with a, where it's a very similar company. The man makes four times as much as the CEO, who's a woman. How do you legislate that?
Well, it's actually, I mean, I think it was a really hard law to pass, but it's, you have to get the same wage earning for equal or similar work, whether you're a man or a woman. And employers have had to rewrite their policies. So as long as we continue to try to equate similar or equal work, we can try to get a better and fairer pay wage for men and women.
And fair for men and women, we now have a minimum wage schedule going into effect?
Yes.
So, but it's not really a livable wage depending on the community, is it?
No, it's not. And I think that, you know, even taking the California model, I think that we, you know, our fair wage needs to be relooked upon. I think that we need to make sure that we as a state, and I can only speak for the state, I mean, we're a nice and big, huge, you know, we're the world's fifth largest economy. And I think we're doing a lot of great things here in California, and that's why I use this state as a model. But I think that we need to up the minimum wage in order to make sure that children and families have an opportunity to live a comfortable life or near comfortable life.
So what about the differential, not just not men and women, but gender race? So does a white woman make more than an Hispanic woman or a black woman? Is there a racial divide too?
There has been a racial divide, and I'm hoping that with this law, I mean, there's always a law, but implementation and monitoring of the law is a whole different story. But yes, I mean, there's been studies have shown that white women made 84 cents to the dollar versus a white male, and black women made 74 cents to the dollar, and Latina women made 44 cents to the dollar. And don't ask me why, because it'll be a whole different show and segment as to how I feel about what Latinas made. But I could not believe it, and it's mind-boggling. But research, it's absolutely true. And the research showed that that's the wage earnings that certain races in the same gender were making. And it's mind-boggling to you and I, Neil, but it's the truth. And so with this equal pay law, Senate Bill 358, we're able to now hold employers accountable to make sure that they're paying their employees the same wages if they are doing the same or equal work, regardless of gender and race.
So how can people get involved?
Well, the most important thing in our organization or in general, I think that people need to ask questions. And I think that you need to just, if you're concerned about the environment or about your education, about getting paid the same wage as a man, I think that you just need to find an organization that best fits you. Here in Santa Barbara, we have various great organizations, mine being one of them. We also have the Women's Political Committee, which is a nonpartisan organization. We have the Democratic Service Club for people who just like to volunteer and walk and send out flyers. And then we have the Democratic Central Committee, where you can run for a position in each district. So there are so many ways to get involved, but do get involved in whatever way.
Well, I'm so motivated now that I'd like to join your group, but it's for Democratic women, so I guess I can't join.
No. You could definitely join. It's for Democratic everyone.
Well,
so
thanks.
That's how Democratic we are, Neil.
Well, thank Christina Pizarro. Thank you so much for being here. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
It's